That was Don Baker, just inside the gates of St. What was then Conlett's Reformatory or Industrial School in Dangan, County Offaly, playing his harmonica. But the best part of nearly 40 years ago, Don, you came in these gates and as a much younger man, boy actually, and it wasn't the happiest of days for you.
No, it wasn't. I was 13 years of age and I was sent here for petty things I've done, and I was sent here for 2 years, and I remember walking through those gates, and the statue there of the St. Conlett with the two fingers held up, it's kind of ironic almost to remind you were here for 2 years, so to speak, and frightening day for me as a child, very frightening to be taken away from your family and put into a place like this.
And of course, you would have come from Dublin.
That's right, yeah. I brought down on a bus down here from Bus Aires in Dublin.
Hadn't a clue where you were. I mean, it's quite an off, the town is off the beaten track, as it were. It's not even in any of the main roads.
That's right, it's just a place that's middle of nowhere, really. Really, it's a remote area around here. And it is out of the way, all right. But sure, I had no idea as a child, like, what was happening, really.
Mm. Were you on your own? Were you the only entrant that day?
I was the only entrant that day, yes, I was.
And did somebody have to accompany you down, or were you just...
Yes, a policeman brought me down here, and I was handcuffed.
Handcuffed?
Yes, I was. And
At 13 years of age?
Yeah. And he asked me what I promised, not to run away, if he took the handcuffs off, and I said I promised, and he took them off, and I was true to my word, I didn't run away. Mm. He'd have probably caught me anyway, so...
Yeah, well, we'll take a walk up towards the buildings and have a ramble through them and see, if you like, how this place speaks to you. But I can imagine what it must have been like for, even if you were a bit wild as a young fellow of 13, to be landed down here.
Yeah, well, the first emotion that hit me, funny enough, as soon as I got here and I saw the walls this morning, was one of anger. I just felt very, very angry. You can get the feeling here, it's very eerie, very, very eerie. And the place hasn't changed a bit now, do you know?
Yeah.
Like, I can see the same paint on the walls. Right. Hasn't been painted. Looks exactly the same as when I was here. You can see the windows there, the all grey paint. And let's go inside and have a wander around.
We're just stepping inside now. When you would have come in, what kind of a welcoming party was there to greet you?
That was a horrible time, because I went into an office, a very dark office, and there was a brother there, I won't mention his name for legal reasons, and the first thing he said to me was, he pointed a pencil at my penis and he said, "Do you play with that?" And to a 13-year-old child, this was I was shocked beyond belief. I just couldn't believe what he just said to me. And I just shook my head, and he said, "Because you won't be doing it here," he said. And they seemed to have this obsession with sex and with masturbation in particular. They were really I just can't describe it to you. They were very fearful, almost really afraid of any kind of sexual. I won't say activity, because I never saw any sexual activity down here.
Preoccupation with sex.
They were preoccupied, yeah. Almost obsessed and preoccupied with this thing about masturbation that, to this day, I still don't understand. I didn't know that many of them are paedophiles. And, of course, that I wouldn't have known what the word meant if someone had said paedophile to me. I wouldn't have had a clue. You know, I would have probably had to look it up in a dictionary to find out what the hell it meant.
Yeah. Well, how many young lads of your age now would have been here roughly at that time, do you remember?
I've been a couple of hundred. Yeah, it's been a couple of hundred. Well, we're walking into the hall here. Just up here is the refectory where we used to have our meals. When I arrived here, the food was absolutely appalling. And we got for breakfast, you got a quarter of a loaf with a lump of margarine stuck on it. And the tea was served from a bucket. A lad would go around with a bucket of tea. It would be milked and sugared, and he would scoop. We had tin mugs, and he would scoop the tea from his bucket and put it into your tin mug. And it was just like, I mean, it, the first thing comes to mind is Oliver. It would remind me of something like that. I don't know whether these doors are open. It's open, yeah. You can see this is like a dungeon here, you can
it's
see.
It's a pretty grim place now, given that it's been out of use and has been painted or whatever, but it has it. It's these vaulted kind of arches.
Yeah, the tables are gone now, you can see, but this was the thing. And when we'd have our meals, you can see like left and right here, there were tables on the left, tables on the right. And a brother that would be on duty would walk up and down, and he'd have his rosary beads at the back saying the rosary as he walked up and down. And I always remember he'd go from side to side, and he always got the feeling he was trying to earwig and find out what people were talking about. You see the door here, this was the kitchen. Yeah. It's all blocked up now. And that's where the food was served from, and the young boys would come out with the trays. And dinner was a tray of potatoes. Where they got them, I have no idea. Most of them had maggots running through them, and a brown rot. And you'd have to get your knife and peel away at maybe a huge, large potato, just to get a little bit of potato out of it. And they served this stuff called goulash. It was bits of meat and bits of chip. And what you had was, in this section here, was a small section, what we call the small section. And up here you had the big section, meant the older boys, and down here were the younger boys. But
was that a problem? Was there any kind of bullying between younger and older fellows?
There was a degree of bullying that went on. I remember two boys in particular that were really, really heavy bullies, and they were big guys, so you didn't mess with them. You know, I tried to avoid them at all costs. But they'd come over and they'd take your cigarettes from you, and maybe if you had a couple of bars of toffee, if you were lucky. And so you didn't let them know what you had, but it was they'd take it on you, steal it from you. So like this is the refectory.
And then in the evening you got a Spartan meal again, I suppose, was it?
In the evening you got your quarter of loaf again, with your lump of margarine in it. Now that lasted for, I was here, I suppose, for the first 6 months I was here. And then they changed, and the food changed then much for the better. And everything got a bit better after that. But talk about the dark ages, like, it was just unbelievable.
Was it a cold building?
Well, it was exactly as it is now. Exactly as it is now. And if you'd done anything wrong, I remember I was in a bit of a scrape with another young boy, and nothing too serious, a bit of a roll around the floor fighting or something. And I was coming through the door there, and there's a brother standing behind the door, and he just reached out and grabbed me by the hair. And I was kneeling in that corner over there. And I got no bread that evening or tea, and had to kneel for the whole duration of the tea time, if you like. I had to kneel in the corner there, and that was just a kind of a punishment. And of course I got a few digs, a few clatters and stuff like that. That's the kind of thing would happen, like. And it's just a weird place altogether, weird. This was the woodwork class here. I remember that he was a very, very nice gentleman. The technical, this was the classes, like we got the group cert here, it was like technical school. And Mr. Whitty, I think his name was, very, very nice gentleman. One of the few people down here that I can honestly say was a nice person. And he was very, very compassionate, I think, and he probably had more family man, I suppose, and maybe he understood children a bit better than maybe the rest of the brothers down here wouldn't have been quite able to, not having a family themselves. But he was a family man, and he was very kind to us, as I remember. So this is here where we've done woodwork. And nice memories of being in here. I used to do a mechanical drawing. And I was never any good at woodwork, but I enjoyed it.
It was something to put in. What would your typical day be like?
Oh, well, this only lasted for... This wasn't like for the whole duration I was here. Typical day would you get up in the morning and you'd wash. The water would be absolutely freezing cold. There was no hot water.
What time?
And the soap was... Yes, and the soap was red scrubbing soap.
Right by the ocean.
Yeah, and of course, from the lack of nutrition, we were all scurvy. We'd have scurvy. I had suffered from scurvy from years. Scurvy on my neck and on my face. And of course, you didn't have any... You wouldn't have any cream or anything to... You just have to live with it. So a combination of the red soap, the scrubbing soap, as we called it, and the lack of nutrition, just gave you the scurvy, and you'd have scurvy. And you'd wash in the morning, and...
What time would you get up?
You'd have to be about 6 for Mass every morning.
6.
6 o'clock every morning for Mass. I mean, that was compulsory. And you'd get Mass, and then you'd go out to the yard. You'd wash first, get Mass, out to the yard for maybe 3/4 of an hour to an hour. And then everything was done at a hand clap. They'd clap the hands for everything. Clap hands to sit down, clap hands to stand up, clap hands to say the rosary, clap hands for everything. There were no verbal orders issued. It was just the clap of a hand. And you're to know what that meant. In answer to your question, yeah, then we'd go in and we'd have the lump of marge and the bit of bread and the sloppy tea. And then back out to the yard maybe for half an hour. Then work details started. You could be working in the shoe shop, say, the cobble, what would you call it? Cobblers, yes. Or you could be working on the farm, you could be working in the fields, weeding, digging potatoes, you could be picking carrots or God knows what else. And then there was gardening as well. You could be working in the front, mowing the grass or mowing the lawn, or you could be...
You'd be out in the bog, couldn't you?
I worked on the bog.
That was some experience for a city lad.
Yeah, it was an experience, all right. It was good fun, actually. Very, very tough work, very hard work. I remember both them when we were digging the turf, I was working with, like you'd see in a picture postcard, a wooden wheelbarrow. And it was very, very difficult. My hands were so small that they wouldn't fit around the shafts. And catching the turf up above the hole, putting it on the wheelbarrow, your hands were going wet, dry, which result, my hands cracked open. I had cuts on both palms of my hands. You still see the scars there, actually. Still the scars left on my hands from it. And, you do that. Basically, that was the hard part of being on the bog. I suppose the easy time being the summertime when we'd be bringing in the turf and putting it in the sacks and then loading it onto a lorry and coming in and dropping it off. That was, the weather would be nice. It would make life a bit more pleasant.
Then you'd have your goulash, as you say, your gruel.
You'd be brought back for dinner hour, and you'd get your goulash and your rotten potatoes. And the dessert was always a kind of a pink custard with lumps in it. They couldn't even cook the bloody stuff properly. You'd be trying to maneuver your spoon around the plate to get a bit of custard and try and leave the lumps behind, So.
And the afternoon then?
In the afternoon, back to work, back working on the bog or wherever you were assigned to. I worked in the church for a long time on my own, which I dreaded, like it played havoc with my nerves. And easy access for the paedophiles as well, I might add. It's very interesting, this part of the building here, this is where they used to flog us. If you did anything wrong, you'd get a serious flogging. And this is where the beatings would take place.
What would constitute wrong now? What would be?
Oh, it could be anything. I suppose the most common thing was if you got into a fight with another boy or... In an institution like this, they were very strict. So it wouldn't take much for something to be considered wrong. Here it is, listen. The Echo. And this is where they used to flog us here.
On the steps.
Here. On the steps here, yeah.
With? What do they use?
You'd be leather. You'd have to kneel here on the ground and, excuse me, stretch your hands out up here. Now, when I was flogged, I don't know whether I stretched my hands to the third step here or the forward step. I imagine it would have been the third step, but it wouldn't have been that big. And then you had this other brother would come up and stand on your fingers like this. So that you couldn't move, you couldn't get away. You couldn't get up and run, in other words. And he was a brother that was over the bog, over the work detail on the bog. Great, great big man. And again, I know his name, but I won't mention his name. I hear he's in Australia at the moment. He'd stand on your fingers. This was my experience. I don't know where he stood on the fingers of all the boys, but he did with me anyway. Stood on my fingers like this. And there was another brother standing in the doorway here. He was a medic. I don't know why he was there. And he's in prison in England now, serving 3 years for molesting young boys. And from what I hear from the police, he's going to be deported back to Ireland when he finishes his term of prison in England. And again, I can't mention names. Mm-hmm. But he stood over there, and the brother who administered I always called it a punishment in my innocence, thinking that I deserved what happened to me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I watched that programme, States of Fear, and I heard the lady who was doing the commentary or narrating it say that Don Baker was beaten. That's the first time that it struck me. Oh, my God, I was beaten. I always considered it to be a punishment. And I didn't realise I'd been abused that badly.
When you were beaten, was it across the bottom, the buttocks? Or
oh, yeah, right or? Down, like where the knee bends. From where the knee bends, right up the back, there'd be. It was almost like if you got something and put it on a blackboard and got a piece of chalk and put a mark. The actual mark of the letter came out on your back. And both my legs were bleeding. And the little veins that would be under the skin burst open, and now whereas like the blood would have been pumping from me, but still it was like you got a pin and stuck loads of pinholes in your legs, and you could see the blood coming through, and of course severely bruised and black and blue. And the guy, you know, that beat me, it took him at least a half an hour to administer the punishment. What he would do is he'd strike me the blow. And of course, your whole body would go into a kind of a spasm, because the pain was like something else. And as you can imagine, like from being here, looking at this place, I had from the cold, you'd have those goose pimples, or is that what they're called? Mm. Goose pimples. And so pretty cold, and the sting of the leather would go right through your body, so you'd tense your whole body. But he'd wait for you to relax, and you wouldn't know when the next blow was coming. And it'd be dead silence, not a word would be spoken, except you'd hear the shiver of it. I always remember trying to get a breath because it knocked the wind out of you, you see. And he'd wait and wait and wait, and you're trying to preempt the blow, and so you're trying to get ready to tense up, and you tense another little bit. And I mean, I went into therapy over all this. It took years. Like, I mean, for years after that, I always felt like my belt was too tight around my waist, or that there was another belt around my chest. You know, it's like, I think the big mistake that I made was I didn't cry. I think if I had been able to cry, I was probably too scared to cry. If I had been able to cry, I might have got some release. But trying to be a big boy and a tough guy, I suppose, prevented me from crying.
And how often would this have happened? And you were saying your 2 years. How many times would you?
Once is enough. You know, it was enough for me. But no, and they did it here, as you say, because right up above us here is the dormitories, and that's where we all slept. And as I demonstrated for you a minute ago, with the, you can hear the crack. The boys upstairs would hear every crack that was struck, and most of the guys, I have to say, would scream, and it'd be quite horrific, like, and they'd be terrified, and they'd be screaming, and of course the other boys upstairs would hear all this. And they ruled us through the fear, and that's striking more fear to everybody. Well, if one boy was severely beaten like that, it affected everybody, because everyone would end up scared to them, you know. Mm. We were all like 13 years of age, hey. It's like quite an ordeal to have to go through. So, yeah, here we have the dormitories, and the toilets were down the back here. Mm. That brown, they're way down the back.
An L-shaped room. So,
yeah, you had one, two, three, four rows of beds. My bed was along. I was lucky enough. My bed was beside a radiator, so I kind of felt lucky there, all right. And I was about five beds up, I suppose. I was like one, two, three. Maybe at the fourth window there was where my bed was. Mm. So I had four rows of beds here, and you had four rows of beds on this side.
Four rows of beds wouldn't give you much space. You
know, very little space in between, walking in between. But that's the way it was. And the night watchman would sit here, and he had a little desk with a little light on it. And I always remember the night that that particular evening I spoke about getting the beating. I was told not to get into bed. And I had to kneel at the bed for a couple of hours while everyone else were going asleep. And I always remember he came up to me with a piece of liver on a fork and handed me the fork with a piece of liver on it. He said, "Here you are, son." He said, "Eat that." Like, so I guess it was his way of saying, "I don't agree with what they've just done to you."
Was he, and he was one of the brothers also, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't a brother. No, he was a man from the town here.
And that's what he was, a night watchman?
A night watchman, yeah.
And did he stay there all night?
All night watching us, yeah. Okay. He'd be there all night. And the brother then in the morning would relieve him. And he'd wake us up with a big stick. Backstreet cores, get out of bed, your backstreet core. And lash the legs off, you didn't get out of bed quick enough. Sometimes across the head as well.
Why did they figure you needed a night watchman? Were you going to escape or would you be up to,
well, yeah,
up to no good?
I guess, like, you're talking about, I call this place Little Auschwitz, you know. And that's my name for this place. And, that's right. This was a prison. That's what it was, prison for little kids, you know. There's no other way to describe it. Look at the walls around here. Look, I mean, it's like Fort Knox, for Christ's sake.
And it was a barracks or a fortress, yeah, originally, so there wasn't much chance of you getting out.
There's no way of getting out of here, no way.
And was it all unrelenting? I mean, obviously a terribly grim picture, very difficult even to listen to at times, but so what it must be for you to remember. But were there any kind of bright days or bright moments? I mean, I suppose
there were times when we'd be playing football and handball, you know, like any recreation where you'd forget about the environment and what was going on around you. And you go down and have a good game of handball or maybe have a game of cards. We used to play jackstones. Did you ever play jackstones? You'd have five stones and throw them up, get them on the back of your hand, and we had all these rules and regulations with the jackstones. And other than that, it was just handball really was the pastime. Mm. Handball and we get out to the field every Wednesday and have a game of Gaelic football. But there wasn't really that much to do.
What about Sunday? What was Sunday like? Was it
Sunday
different?
Sunday was different, yeah. You got you lay in, I think, until about 8 o'clock on Sunday. And you get mass and then you'd be back out of the yard. And the same, more or less the same thing, except for instead of going to work, you hung around the yard all day. You went in for your dinner. It was the same kind of thing. Nothing special for Sunday, no special Sunday dinner or anything like that. And Sunday was pretty much a very, very boring day. At least when you were walking, you had something to do. But on Sunday, there was nothing to do. And you could only play so much handball, you know.
And I suppose you had no real contact with the town outside?
No, not at all, no. You rarely see any of the locals. And you're kept well away from those people.
So a letter from your mother must have been a great...
Oh, great, yeah.
Comfort.
Now, the letter would be open and censored, of course. And, you know, but more importantly, as opposed to a couple of bob was better. Now, it was nice to hear from home, and as I say, like, my mother was very good to me.
Yeah.
And she'd always send me down a couple of shillings and stuff like that. And, so, if you like to
and
work...
And your father?
No,
was he
father.
In the scene at all?
No, he never wrote to me, or he never sent me anything. Mm. Yeah, I don't think he ever came to visit me. He did on one occasion in the 2 years. And, but I think we're for alternative reasons. Now, when it would rain, this was a recreation hall here. Yeah. And when it would rain, this is where they put us.
And you can go to the chapel from
the
washroom.
This is the recreation hall here. And we had a bench running on this side and a bench running along the wall on both sides.
Big, long.
And we just, when it was raining, this is where we'd all come. Home. Yeah. So we'll move up here and up to the church.
The church particularly seems to have...
One of my jobs was to ring the Angelus at 12 o'clock during the day and at 6 o'clock in the evening. And I'll always remember it was 3 threes and a nine. And I always remember, the place is fairly old, and when you would ring the Angelus, I'd have all the straw coming down. It was a big rope, and all the straw would come down and land on my hair. I always remember that. So, there we go, yeah.
It's the handball.
That's the yard where we played. And those oil drums went there before. Mm. And that's where the handball alley was, to see that little... that little... And here's a shelter over here that, if it wasn't raining too heavy, they wouldn't take us inside, so we'd all gather over there. And I always remember kicking those poles. I was very heavy on shoes, and they gave me these shoes with steel caps on the toes. Mm. And I can always remember kicking those poles, it's funny the things that come back to you, the memories you'd have.
Out of anger, I suppose, or frustration, or
I suppose boredom, maybe, or whatever. Yeah. But now I think what we have here is the washrooms. Yeah. This is where the washroom. You'll see the mark of the washroom basin is on the wall. And as I said, you can see them there. Look. There was no hot water. So it was freezing cold water every morning. I used to dread having to get washed in the morning. And of course, we never got a shower. Never. No showers. No baths. No showers. So
whatever you could manage in a hand basin.
I think we actually got... I remember getting one shower while I was here. Don't know why it was that they suddenly decided to let us have a shower. Because there were showers up in the... where the school was. When you arrived here first, you went to school for a week. For 1 week. Hmm. And
Did you say there were private teachers that came in there?
That's right, yeah. I think as far as I can remember, the teacher's name was Mr. Martin, as far as I can remember. And I don't know whether we should be using any names here or not. Hmm. But he was a decent sort of a man anyway. And it's a funny thing. I don't know why they sent us to school for one bloody week and then decided that your education's finished. Hmm. Yeah, this is this hallway here. I used to have to sweep every Saturday, and what we used to have to do was throw tea leaves on the floor.
Keep the dust down.
To keep the dust down. The spring of all this.
And it's a long hallway.
It's a long.
Everything
hallway.
Is so long there. All the rooms are long.
Yeah. Sprinkle all this with tea leaves, and then sweep it up. And
every Saturday.
Every Saturday. Yeah, that was my one of my jobs. So
now entering the chapel.
Now entering the chapel. Well, this is where I worked about a year and 2 months, I suppose. And this is where the interrogation happened to me. And I've horrible memories of this church. Absolutely horrible memories. And you can imagine, if you just stand still for a second, imagine being here from 9 o'clock in the morning until, 12:30, and then from, 2 o'clock until 5 every day on your own.
What were you supposed to be doing? Polishing,
dusting. And there's only so much dusting you can do. Yeah. Most of the time, I just sit in seats and daydream. But it's her nerves would be wrecked. Yeah. It was bad enough being in the place, but to be isolated and be on your own. You know what I mean? I spent hours here on my own, every day. Even without being interrogated or questioned, I suppose somebody would, I don't know, go off their bloody head.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so quiet here. You can see see the bar, where the rope came through for the... It's all... The bell is gone now, I suppose, but it's plastered over. Yeah. And there was an old organ up there, and that's gone. That's where they used to, use the rope to ring the Angelus. If you'd like to walk down here, the stack of seats down the back here.
Yeah, and on the wall still above, I suppose, with the altar, it says, Sanctus, 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 which,
yeah.
I mean, in theory... A place like this should be a sanctuary, a place of escape, but it wasn't really.
No, not for me, it wasn't. I remember one morning being at Mass. As I said earlier on, it was compulsory that we got Mass at 6 o'clock every morning. Well, half six, actually. We were up at six, half an hour to wash, and then straight into Mass. And one boy, at the front row here, there was pews. The pews are gone from here now. In the very front pew, and he began to fall asleep. And the priest came down from the Mass and began to beat him all around the place. Began to punch him and clatter him. Unbelievable. The names he was calling him, like, you know, just having a bad morning. And I always remember this church. I always laugh at this story. I'll tell you this story. This particular priest is still alive, and I won't mention names for obvious reasons. We were all ushered in here one day, one Saturday afternoon, because you didn't work Saturday afternoon. You worked Saturday morning, but not Saturday afternoon. We were all ushered in here one Saturday afternoon. It's a benediction, because sometimes you have to get benediction. And hadn't a clue why. We came in, and there was a kind of a pulpit over here. Now it's gone now. And you know, I sat down, waited a couple of minutes. Next in walked this particular priest, walked up, took his glasses off, put his Bible down, and began thumping the Bible, screaming at the top of his voice, wanking, 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 screaming all over the church. I mean, it's comical, but we were so terrified. You had to be here. Like, we were just, what in the name of God is going on, you know? And he said, wasting the seed of life, you know? And he was frothing at the mouth and totally freaked. They were all, I said, had this thing in their head, paranoia almost. I don't know what word to use to describe it. Then he proceeded to tell us this story that I sometimes have to laugh at today because it's so ridiculous. But you have to remember, like, we were just young boys and very, very impressionable, you know? He said that there was a young boy who masturbated, and he got very, very ill from masturbating. Very, very ill. So his mother, he had to be put to rest, so to speak, and he had to strap both his arms down. Otherwise, he would masturbate and surely kill himself, was the story. And the parish priest was brought in, and they would say the rosary and pray over him all day long. And one particular day, as the story was related to us, the woman of the house said, would you like a cup of tea, Father? And they both went down to the kitchen and had a cup of tea. But while they were gone, didn't our boy get one of his hand loose? And they came back up and he was dead in the bed. Now, it's so funny to recall that story now, but at the time, we were absolutely terrified. And I remember making eye contact with a few boys as we walked from the church when this shenanigans, or whatever the hell you might call it, was over. And everyone was kind of throwing their eyes to heaven and saying, never again, never again. You know, but I do dead nuts on that kind of thing, like, for some reason. And as I say, like, I've never, in the time I was here, I never saw anything happen between boys of a sexual nature. Nothing whatsoever. Nothing. And I could never understand what the hell they were on about, you know? I remember being here one evening. This is the sacristy here. And this is where, of course, the Eucharist is kept and the wine. But I remember standing right at this very spot here. And this particular brother, this paedophile guy who eventually was the guy who beat me, came in, and they wore his great big a cassock. Yeah, he wore this great big cassock. And he had his hands in, maybe there were pockets in it, I'm not sure, but there were slits in the sides anyway. And he comes in and he says to me, I was told that you kissed a boy in the handball alley. I hadn't a clue. What the hell is this guy on about? And I thought for a minute, could I have been joking, or could I have hugged somebody as a mess, or was it trick acting? I'm trying to think. Maybe somebody saw me do something and they took it up wrong. Or then I thought, no, I can't remember anything like that. So I said, I don't think so, brother. He took this letter out from underneath this, what I thought at the time was a dress, and whacked me across the face. I'm not sure whether it's the left cheek or the right cheek, but he got me across the cheek anyway. And he said, I want you to tell me the truth. Right at this very spot. And I says, but I am telling you the truth. And back across the face. And he'd done that several times. Now, I began to shed a tear. But it wasn't that the physical pain of what he was doing. It was the insinuation. cut me deeply. The insinuation really hurt me. Because I'm not a homosexual, and I've never had homosexual tendencies. And if I did, I'd be quite open and honest about it, and I would not be ashamed of it. There's nothing wrong with being homosexual. Absolutely. It's just sexuality. It's only part of... If that's the way you are, that's the way you are. You know, and it should be respected.
He wouldn't have seen that, of course.
You see, I think that they were just this religious thing. They were just totally freaked about... I don't know. I still can't understand it today because I can't get inside the mind of a paedophile. I would never interfere with children. I can't understand how anybody could. And this went on and on and on for ages. And then he says to me, I believe you. Picks me up off the ground. I'm trying to keep my face away from his face. And I have my hands like this. I'm saying, you are a good boy, he says. And this man is like 6'6". And I'm like 4'3" or something. And like, I couldn't just, I vomited that day. When he left here, I went into the corner over here and I've actually puked. I puked over here into the washing basin.
Was there apart from the beatings and the insinuations and the wallopings and that? But when you talk about paedophiles, I mean, were there examples of abuse of children?
Yeah, because some of the other boys told me, this one brother in particular. Now I think he's dead. I have no evidence that I don't know. I know 3 or 4 boys that they're related to me, that he had taken them up to his room, and he. Done wherever he did, and but see, I always knew that he was. It wasn't until I didn't quite understand what was happening, even up until the time when I left here. It was years later. I picked up an Evening Herald one evening, and I began to read this stuff about paedophiles, and I began to read where they like to groom their victims. And when I saw the word groom, I knew immediately. That's what that brother was trying to do to me. He was trying to break me down and groom me. The only thing that saved me was I always pretended I didn't know what he was talking about. When he'd ask me, like, did you get... he wouldn't say an erection, he would say, did you go hard down there? And I'd say, what do you mean, brother? Like, of course I did, and of course I masturbated. All young boys do. It's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, it's human nature, for Christ's sake. And, but I knew... If I give this guy an inch, I'm gone. I'm destroyed. If I give this guy 1 inch, and I played innocent right down the line. I just was able. Don't ask me how I did it, but I was able to keep that wall up between us. I just it took all my strength not to break and to be able to do it, you know. And I think what happened then was that he began to realise, I'm not getting through to this kid. I'm not going to break this kid. This kid is actually beating me, and that's when he beat me on the stairwell outside. That was his way of getting at me. And he still didn't get to me because I got up after the beating, got up and smiled at him, which I shouldn't have done. It aimed me a box in the face.
To another part of this establishment, which I'm told still, and well, we can see them, the Christmas decorations are still lying tattered on the walls, the paper chains from the 1970s. But this had another purpose in your day. It was a visiting room.
This room was a visiting room. This one, if your parents came to see you or your friends came to see you, and they'd wait here while a brother came to fetch you, and they brought you here, and there was tables and chairs in here, and it was also used for ping pong. We used to play ping pong here. And So, yeah, that's what this was called.
That is very, very much like prison in that way. I mean, did they not, were you not allowed out around the grounds with
visitors? No, not at all.
Just had to meet them here.
Yeah, it was very strict place, you know. Mm-hmm. And, maybe allowed in the summertime, just outside there in the grass. Mm-hmm. But that'd be as far as you'd go.
So, someone remarked that you're covered in cobwebs, but there are a lot of cobwebs of memory here. And
a lot of cobwebs of memory.
Yeah, and not happy ones.
Like, in many ways, I suppose I'm the man I am today from the different experiences I've had in life, and I have tried to live without regret and say, well, what has the learning experience been like for you? You know, what, I don't know, maybe is it forgiveness I need to practice? I don't know. But I'd like to take some positive meaning out of it rather than staying negative. I'd like to get positive and say, well, you know, it was an experience, been my experience, and for whatever that's worth, I'm grateful for some aspects of it. You know, I like who I am today, and it's probably molded me into who I am today, and it's certainly part of it anyway. And it woke me up, I suppose. So even if it's just that one thing came out of it, that's good enough for me, I suppose.
Hmm. Well, you won't be too... when you left, do you remember the day you left?
I remember what I said. The brother that beat me, and I don't know why I said it to him. He put me on a bus, and I turned around. It was one of those old buses. You went up the three silver steps, and he brought me right to the door of the bus, and the banjo doors parted, and I turned around and I said to him, I'll pray for you.
Was that with a certain amount of cynicism, or did you really mean it?
I really meant it, yeah. I wasn't being sarcastic at all. Mm. I don't ask you, the words just come into my mouth. Just turned around to him and said, I'll pray for you.
Did he say anything?
No. Just turned around and walked away.
Mm. Never saw him again.
And the song that was going through my mind was Simon and Garfunkel, Homeward Bound.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.